Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. My guest today has a list of accomplishments so long that I could spend half the show fitting them all in. Today, I've asked him to talk about just one of his passions, Black history. His interest began while he was chaplain for the NBA's Washington Bullets from 1979 to 1998. He went on to write a book called Return to Glory with Don Griffin to highlight the significant accomplishments of African descendants since the dawn of civilization. He's also co-created an award-winning film with the same title. Dr. Joel Freeman is president and CEO of the Freeman Institute. He's an author, international speaker, counselor, life coach, and corporate trainer. For more information, you can contact him at joelafreeman.com. Dr. Freeman, welcome to Heartline.
Good to be here. Thank you, Rita.
Okay, I know you get this question all the time, but I have to ask it. How did a white guy get so passionate about African-American history?
Well, I'll tell you, it still is a journey. And coming from Canada, where I grew up, is a small town of about 2,000 people. Nine ice hockey rinks in the small town. I left home when I was 17.
Wow.
Became a long-haired hippie, a dope-smoking fool, and just
did
began
really?
To hitchhike all around North America.
Oh my gosh.
Did that for close to 2 years. And what happened is that when I came down south, south of the border, I said, you know, kind of what the heck is going on down here? And it took some time for me to try to, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And by the way, I repaired everything with my parents and, you know, my dad and my mom became my best friends. You know, really great things emerged out of that, our relationship.
You stopped smoking dope?
I did, yes. Yeah, long time ago. But what happened is after a series of situations, I became chaplain for the Washington Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow, that's a big switch.
Yeah, I was one of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA, so it was kind of a unique experience on a number of levels. But a lot of the players, they kind of looked at me and said, "You got to be kidding me! You know, this guy is 25 years of age." A lot of the African American players, you know, they're kind of trying to test the sincerity of my heart, perhaps. I don't know. They start asking questions because their position in life attracts a lot of insincere people. And so, in some ways, whether consciously or unconsciously, they were trying to check the sincerity of my heart, perhaps. And they start asking questions like, you know, what did the people of African descent do in terms of biblical and extra-biblical history? Where was the Garden of Eden located? What did Jesus look like? You know, just questions that weren't hardly even a blip on my radar screen, and I began to research. And then you fast forward to 1995, approximately, 94, I met Don Griffin, and we ended up co-writing a book together. Don is African-American. He began to share with me his journey. We ended up co-writing a book together and a film together called Return to Glory. And Rita, it just has been a continual journey since then.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book and the movie?
Well, it's basically about ancient history. It's taken from Isaiah chapter 18. And which talks about people from beyond the rivers of Ethiopia who are tall, smooth of skin, awesome, to be feared. Or King Jimmy says they're terrible from the beginning onward. And that's really, Rita, what grabbed me is that statement, you know, terrible from the beginning onward. And I thought, my goodness, I know that the Bible is not given to hyperbole or exaggeration. There's got to be some extra biblical information, some research that can corroborate that statement. And so that's what launched me on the journey. Don wrote the first half of the book, which is all about the ancient historical information. And then I wrote the second half, which basically is a response to the question, I've got a lot of information stuff between my ears, but what do I do with all this emotion that's gurgling around inside of me? And some of it is anger, some of it's confusion, some of it's just frustration with how come I didn't know this in all my education? And so what I did is in the whole second half, I began to talk about the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap and to talk about the grieving process and those types of things as it relates to the loss of innocence for a young man or young woman who is hated or derided merely because of the color of his or her skin.
Yeah, when we talk about Black history, we always think about slavery. But Black history really begins in ancient times, doesn't it?
That's very true. You know, I own a collection now of over 3,000 pieces of Black history. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. And the objective, the goal through my nonprofit is to help establish galleries, calling them overcomer galleries, that are designed to educate and inspire young people. And the reason why they're overcomers galleries is because the whole concept of blades of grass in a concrete jungle, the concrete being a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, and the blades of grass are the people that have cracked through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. But one of my goals is to, first, when people come into one of the galleries, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 square feet, first thing they'll see is something that brings them back to ancient times, the Rosetta Stone. Reminds people that Egypt's in Africa. That also can provide a segue, almost a literal touchstone to ancient times, other ancient African kingdoms, of which there's limited documentary evidence, but a rich oral tradition. And then to remind people that slavery was not the beginning of Black history, that there's a rich oral tradition, there's a rich history there of great accomplishments. And then now we're ready for the good, the bad, and the ugly of the last four centuries here in America.
Mm. So what part did African Americans play in biblical history?
Well, African people of African descent played a tremendous role. We have the three sons of Noah and Mrs. Noah. We have Ham and Shem and Japheth. And there's 70 nations that emerged out of those three sons. And we can see Japheth's descendants beginning to move more toward Europe. We see Shem's descendants that are more in the what we now know as the Middle East. And Ham had sons. One was by the name of Mizraim. His name literally means two Egypts, upper or lower Egypt, and his descendants, they populated Egypt. We have another son by the name of Put, and his descendants populated areas around Libya, North Africa. And then we have another son, Cush, who populated the area around Somalia, Ethiopia, that region. And then Canaan, or Canaan, however one pronounces his name, he's the one that was cursed, not Ham. There's a lot of opinions about what happened with the curse. And all I know is that we can point to, we can open up our newspaper today and know that Libya still exists, Egypt still exists, Ethiopia still exists, but Canaan, I believe that the curse, which Exodus chapter 20 talks about visiting the second, third and fourth generation, I believe that that's what the curse is all about, is that Canaan no longer exists, that was literally wiped out. But the implications are, when you start studying Scripture and you start seeing that the descendants from Ham, from Mizraim, from Cush, from Put, we see that there's just a rich history of individuals that were direct descendants of Ham. And I believe that Ham's descendants all began to populate Africa. And so it's very interesting. And, of course, from a genetic standpoint, it now has been proven, genetically proven, that Eve, the Eve that we know about in the Bible, the mother of all living, as her name means, had to come from Africa and was from Africa.
Really?
Her dark skin, her skin had to be dark because lighter comes from darker, not the reverse. And from somewhere in Africa, Eve was the mother of all living. And we have, there's just a lot of controversy, a lot of ideas that float around about that. And I don't want to go on rabbit trails about this, but, you know, that is something that's solid evidence that Eve had to have been a woman of a black woman in order for all the other hues and tones to emerge from her DNA.
So black history is rich. It contributed in a huge way to the world's development. And that's what you want people to know.
Yeah, basically, Rita, what I'm thinking is, I've got a PhD, which some say just simply means piled higher and deeper. it really is, when I look back at my education, I'm learning stuff that I never learned in school. And that's part of my passion, is to share information that at least gets people thinking and perhaps even discussing some things. And I developed a website called truthcentrism.com. That's truth, T-R-U-T-H, and then centrism, C-E-N-T-R-I-S-M, truthcentrism.com. Because the more I studied, the more I realized there's great research, for instance, on the Eurocentric side and also on the Afrocentric side. But the more you scratch on both sides of the coin, the more you realize that, man, there's some wacky stuff too. And so when I'm reading a book or I'm talking with someone and they start making comments or statements that just cannot be corroborated by original sources that are just outlandish, now I'm going to go cha-ching, 70% discount on everything else you tell me, or everything else that's read that I'm reading in this book. Because I'm really beginning to wonder what's going on. So I've tried to introduce the whole concept of truth centrism. First of all, by defining and then critiquing both Afrocentrism and Eurocentrism. At the very beginning of the website, I say, if you lean toward Afrocentrism, be prepared to get frustrated with me. The next line says, if you lean toward Eurocentrism, be prepared to get frustrated with me. And I try to introduce this whole concept of truth centrism, which is not the destination. It's the essence of the journey. It's how a person will continually, the research methods that are used. And in studying Scripture, for instance, there's a difference between eisegesis and exegesis. Eisegesis is basically I have a preconceived notion, and I'm going to look for Scriptures that support my previously held opinion or perspective. And there's plenty of ways to do that. And there's plenty of Scriptures to support whatever I'm thinking. But exegesis is that I come to the Scriptures, I use certain rules of interpretation. For instance, I look at the linguistics, the language, I look at the context, I look at the mores, the folkways, the times, what people were thinking, perhaps what they were dealing with, and the cultural perspectives. And then little by little, like a Polaroid snapshot, the reality, the truth, begins to emerge, and I submit myself to that, even if it goes against what I was previously thinking. So if one can apply this to the study of history, I think that there will be a whole lot more light and a whole lot less heat around some of the topics, especially that are rooted in racial, ethnic type of subject matters.
Yeah. What do you think the most exciting truth is that you've discovered in all this? I mean, I probably can't even name just one, but...
Well, I think that for me, with my studies in psychology and conflict resolution, I look at it, you know, there's many topics, you know, just studying about someone like Harriet Tubman gets me so excited. I mean, what a diminutive woman, less than 5 feet tall, who suffered from frontal lobe epilepsy, which means that she got hit as a young lady, 15 years of age. Someone threw a 2-pound weight and hit her in her head. And from that moment on, she began to experience sleep episodes where she'd be in the middle of a conversation and then fall asleep for 8 to 10 minutes and then wake up completing the sentence that she had started. And you can imagine all the stuff that was stacked against her just as a young, a small, diminutive African-American woman going back some 30 times to rescue her family and friends, and not knowing that if the dogs are chasing them and people with guns chasing them, and she could fall asleep at that moment of stress, high stress, but still she did it. That kind of stuff. But the thing that I look at is I look for gateways. And to me, I've never seen something quite like the gateway of history that opens up hearts and minds to think outside of what they've been thinking, to talk about things that formerly or even were uncomfortable or even are uncomfortable at the moment for that person. And to me, that is tremendous. I approach this all from a perspective of mediation, conflict resolution, and to be able to talk about people, events, and to learn from them, to elicit the ideas and concepts and principles that we can then use in our own lives. In fact, sometimes when I'm just thinking about, for instance, that whole metaphor of blades of grass in a concrete jungle, and I just see how thick the concrete is for somebody, and then I see what they've accomplished in spite of it. And then I think to myself, I got problems. You know, what this person, against all odds, like a Frederick Douglass or a Solomon Northrop or a William Still or Amanda Smith, who went to white-controlled mission agencies and was turned down left and right in the late 1800s, had a beautiful singing voice, and she just, her husband had died, and she just charted off on her own, went to India, went to Liberia, Sierra Leone, England, and just did what she was going to do and wrote a book about it, and had a tremendous impact with all the, you know, the good old boy network, so to speak, shutting her down, and she just not turning. I'm sure she struggled with bitterness. I'm sure she struggled with questions, but went beyond that, cracked through it, and decided, I'm going to do something regardless of whether I'm accepted or not. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff I think that not only inspires, but creates conversations and creates an inquisitiveness. You know, we've heard of the purpose-driven life. How about the curiosity-driven life? You know, it creates curiosity. What can I learn today? How can I apply it to my life today? How can I use it to help give someone else the benefit today? So rather than trying to be the number one rat in the rat race of life and step on as many people as possible to get there, instead looking for ways to lift other people up over the fence and to break down walls and barriers and to help other people, I think that's a much better way to live life.
Mm. So you believe history is the gateway to bridging the divide between race and ethnicity?
Yes. It's a great way to get people to talk, start talking. You know, for instance, I have on Facebook, and anyone can sign up for it. I have over 7,500 people now on, it's called three words, Black History Collection on Facebook. And basically, I just post, here I'm a white guy from Canada, you know, what do I have to share? What do I know about the African-American experience? What do I know? I know very little. In fact, when I speak on this topic, I say at the end we're going to have Q and R, not Q&A, because I don't have any answers. But I can respond. But my responses are genuinely inadequate, so I hope that there's a collective wisdom that will emerge from the people in the room here when my responses are inadequate. But it's the whole idea of being able to bring people together to talk about things. For instance, with my collection, let's say I'm speaking for the FBI, working with all their recruiters, and or speaking for the White House communication staff, or for the Secret Service, or at the United Nations. And I put some things out, some pieces out on the table, and I see people of different ages, different generations, different ethnicities, I'm sure different religions represented, different genders. I see people huddled over that table looking at things. I see people talking, and I see hearts opening to discussing things, and just to basically having the non-eggshell approach, you know, that walking on eggshells type of thing, just to say, hey, folks, you know, so what if we say something stupid? Let's talk about this within the framework of commitment to each other, you know, because that's what I do when I have a friendship that's developing. I say, please, you know, allow me to talk with you about anything that's ricocheting around in my head, and not if, but when it's stupid, please accept me. And when I do say something stupid, please don't attack my heart. You can attack my head, but not my heart. I mean well, but maybe I wasn't thinking right.
That's so powerful, Joel.
I think it's like investing. You know, you have high-risk investment, medium, low-risk investment. High-risk investment, highly speculative stuff, but there's high rate of return. Low-risk, pretty safe, perhaps, but low return. I choose to live my life as a high-risk investor in terms of cross-cultural communication. I used to, as a pastor, I would be in disagreement with somebody, let's say, of a different ethnicity or a different race about something. But I found that I would keep my mouth shut because I was afraid of saying something stupid. No more for that. I just think it's important to discuss things, to talk through things, and to risk. And I'm a high-risk person.
Oh, me too. I love that. I just love that. Well, tell me, how does all this fit into the greater paradigm of what society needs to do and what the church needs to do to help people understand diversity?
Well, I think, first of all, there needs to be, I think people, all of us, and I speak myself first and above all, we need to confront any racist or prejudicial, stereotypical thinking that's within us. And that means even the jokes that we tell, the attitudes that we have, and to really, truly confront them. And there's some dark stuff in all of us. So I think that when we start looking at the universal nature of the impact, the negative impact of our human nature, there's something about that we just take a look at ourselves rather than pointing the finger and say, oh, tisk, tisk, look at that attitude. But I'm thinking, secondly, it's to take a look outside. So first, it's internal look, and then it's externally, to taking a look at how we can start setting up intentional conversations with other people. Is there a way that we can begin to look at things? And then I look at the icons that we have around us. You know, why isn't there some huge memorial for Frederick Douglass or Harriet Tubman? What's the breakdown there? Why is it just about, thankfully, you know, George Washington and all these other? Why isn't there more of an effort to bring icons and things that around us that demonstrate what other people have brought to this country, for instance, and other countries?
Well, why isn't there?
Well,
it's getting better.
Yeah, it is, but it for lack of a better illustration, it's whoever wins the war gets to write the history.
Yeah.
And I think it's Churchill who said that. And so basically we look at for instance, the decades and even the centuries of our history books here in America, for instance. And it's not until last few decades, relatively speaking, that Afrocentrism has begun to get some traction. And so, you know, you have the kind of the Eurocentric view. And so I'm just saying, you know, let's just take a look at some of these things and let's wrestle with them, but all within the framework of mutual respect. So it's not a traditionalist view where we say, well, because I think it must be right, or this is the way we've always done it, or the way we've always taught it, instead of a view where we, as the anthropologists say, we go native and basically lose our own history and our own identity in the process as we try to seek to understand so much. I think it's more mutual respect. And like Augustine said in the 4th century, he said, seek to understand before seeking to be understood. And those are words worth embroidering. In fact, they're worth repeating. Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. European history, like Britain, it's more of dealing with class. But in America, it's about race. We've got to understand race because we have such a tortured past. It's woven into the fabric of our society and our culture and our history. And, gosh, it took a civil war to even address the issue. More blood was shed, more lives lost than World War I, World War II, the Vietnam conflict, and the Korean War all put together. And so, whether it was a judgment from God, you know, you can have theologians and historians discuss all that kind of stuff, but it's a fact, it's a reality that we fought because of this issue that our forefathers refused, didn't have the willpower, didn't have the spine to deal with.
Well, Joel, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today and enriching our lives by telling us all of the things that we need to know about how Black history contributed to our country.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Rita. God bless.
God bless you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.